action for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and for this hour, they're going to be the views of Michael Shaw from Freedom Advocates. And, of course, Michael has an organization right here in Santa Cruz where I live, which is really one of the centers where all of these crazy ideas about sustainable development and Agenda 21 were introduced long before they were reduced any other place or introduced any other place in the world, because we have a university here and we have Marxists working at the highest levels of our society here and on our city council. And of course, if you understand sustainable development, when you hear the term sustainable development, just think socialism. In other words, this is an environmental socialism, a solution to every problem facing the world today, global warming, certainly the shortages of water, shortages of electricity, the necessity of dramatically increasing the price of propane and oil and all these things. All of these things, the solution to all of the problems facing is more government control. Well, of course, it's the government that's really created most of the problems to begin with, but the average individual doesn't understand that. What's happening financially really is all part of the environmental movement. It's part of the Earth Charter. The Earth Charter, written by three billionaires, Stephen Rockefeller, who I understand has passed on and gone to his just reward, but certainly Maurice Strong, a multi-billionaire, Gorbachev, had at his disposal the full wealth of the Soviet Union. Now he gives talks, $100,000 a talk usually, very much sought after. When Gorbachev gave his had a State of the World Forum meeting, I think in the late 1990s, everybody was there. Everybody of anybody importance in the world, whether it be George Herbert Walker Bush or George Shultz or James Baker III or all of the people who really rule our country from behind the scenes, were there to acknowledge Gorbachev. And Gorbachev, of course, responsible for the Earth Charter. And, of course, what does that have to do with what's happening financially? But it has everything to do. Because in the Earth Charter, point 10A, they will talk about equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations, and what you're seeing today is the transfer of America's wealth to other nations. And, of course, raising the living standards throughout the world and lowering our living standards here, it's all part of a plan, and until you understand that, nothing going on makes sense. That's the Earth Charter. If you don't have a copy, you can get one from Radio Liberty, or you can get it on the Internet. Just Google in Earth Charter and pull it down and read it and study it and understand. But right now we've got Michael Shaw waiting patiently on the line. Hi, Michael. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, Stan. I was waiting with eager anticipation hearing your discussion. You know, what you really described is the outcome of this globalized plan called sustainable development. I mean, they even have a terminology. There are guidebooks for how people can become activists in the sustainable development movement. And you're so right when you say one of the launching pads was here in Santa Cruz. People used to laugh at Santa Cruz, but now the joke's on everybody, because every county in the country today has a sustainable development program. guided by NGOs, that's non-governmental organizations, which are all accredited by the United Nations for the purpose of implementing sustainable development.
All right, well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Michael Shaw. And believe me, your county has it. They may not call it sustainable development, but that's the plan. And we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. All right, Michael, why don't you go right ahead?
Well, let's start by defining sustainable development. In essence, sustainable development has three components. One is a global land use component. That's why the global to local situation puts such pressure on private property owners. It's why ranchers and farmers are having such difficulty in this country, and why that attack on private property is coming to your suburbia. So nobody's going to avoid the global land use program being imposed by sustainable policy unless we first understand the coordination to achieve that goal. The second major component is global education. It is training today our students in government schools for accepting their role as a global citizen. It is happening in your school. It's required by federal legislation. And the third aspect is a program for global population control. That means what we do and how we do it, and reduction. The United Nations, in its own companion document to Agenda 21, the proposed Treaty of 1993-94 regarding biodiversity issues, says that human population should be reduced to 1 billion people if the world is to remain with an industrial element. Now, that's an 86% reduction from today's population. I think that those reasons in describing the program of sustainable development is all that the average citizen needs to know to gain a commitment to say, I want to know what this is, and I do not want my children indoctrinated in this message.
Well, not only that, but if they're going to dramatically decrease the size of the population, they're going to have to kill off a large part of the world's population, and people don't understand. These people think nothing at all about killing a million here, a billion there. They have no value for human life because, of course, they look at the world entirely differently. And certainly Jacques Cousteau talking about the necessity of, in the UNESCO Courier, talking about the necessity of killing or eliminating 350,000 people a day. 350,000 people a day, not a word about it in the general media. If you doubt that, we've got copies of the UNESCO Courier where he's quoted as saying that, but you see, these people look differently, but you're never going to know about it because the media is controlled and the average individual will never hear the truth.
Well, we just have to all work a little harder. You know, the day, I think the day will come when the information rises up.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Michael Shaw. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Michael was just saying that the plan, and they've written this out, and you can get copies of the plan, would be to actually lower the world population to a 1 billion if we were industrialized. Of course, if we were not industrialized, why, people would have a living standard of that of the Eastern European. That's pretty low. That's sort of a peasant attitude. But if they were going to get to keep an industrialized society, about a billion people, and nobody ever asks, how are they going to get down to a billion? Well, quite frankly, they're going to kill them off. And we simply quoted Jacques Cousteau, who was quoted in the UNESCO Courier of November 1991, talk about the necessity of killing or eliminating, I think that was a nice word he used, 350,000 people a day. And if you doubt that, we'll be glad to send you a copy of the pages of the UNESCO Courier of November 1991, where he said that. But you see, the controlled media would never let you know that they really are planning on exterminating large segments of the population throughout the world and right here in the United States. So pick that story up, because population is an important part. Population control is a very important part of sustainable development.
Well, I'm going to start at this level and talk about how I think it's easiest for people to begin to understand the scheme that is behind the goals of the globalist philosophy. And I think the best way to start with that is to understand how it is that today's politics, the sustainable development engine that has run roughshod over Congress, is in Sacramento, is in Santa Cruz, is in your county. And what its focus is on is to attack the idea of unalienable rights, the stated goals of sustainable development activity is, one, to abolish private property. Two, it's to base world governance on public decree, not individual rights. And as we were talking about a bit ago, it is to reduce human population. You see, globalists wish to overrule the concept that life, liberty, and property form the cornerstone of the American experience. Our Declaration of Independence established that government exists to protect each individual's unalienable right to his life, his liberty, and his property. Well, we've moved a long ways from that. If you listen to the presidential candidates traipsing around America today, you won't hear any talk of government's role in the protection of unalienable rights. And that's because every candidate, other than perhaps Ron Paul, is a sustainable development candidate. They are people moving us toward this new political and new economic framework called sustainable development. In a thumbnail, you described it as socialism in the introduction. I think it's a special breed of socialism. It's what I call fascist, small f, communism, capital C. And like we used to be a republic, a democratic republic, small d, capital R. What a fascist communist society is one where the law becomes rooted in a different concept of justice than what we've experienced here in America. That concept of justice is generally referred to today in law schools and in courts and in universities as social justice. It's the pursuit of social justice. Well, social justice is a system of human rights that acts in concert with the pursuit of a social objective. So we can define it as law formulated to obtain government's social objectives at the expense of individual liberty. What we're losing is the concept of equal justice, which was referred to by Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. Equal justice is a system that protects individual rights, and it's based on that kind of system of justice that sees everyone equally and gives out justice in accordance with the protection of every individual's unalienable rights. So we're seeing our justice system shift out from under us as our politicians increasingly appoint judges with a social justice perspective. And so our property rights begin to erode. Our parental authority begins to wane, and our society begins to decay. Now, we can reverse that. We've got to understand the forces behind social justice, and then what I'll talk about is the forces behind the economic fascism that combines with that communist system of justice. Because sustainable development calls for a shift in how American economics is to be performed. And that's a shift from free enterprise to public-private partnership. Now, that's a sweet term, and you hear it all over the place now. If you look at all, you're going to find it in your town, and you're going to find it in your state, and you're going to find it, when George Bush wanted to bring the Dubai Middle Eastern countries company over to control our port. That's an example of public-private partnership. Or when a Spanish corporation is going to buy the highway in Texas that will create the corridor that extends through Mexico, U.S., and Canada to create a trade policy that is the foot maiden then of the globalist new infrastructure coming to America. we're seeing signs of the sustainable development objectives flowering all over. And fortunately, a lot of opposition is arising as the globalist effort to break down the borders seemingly is succeeding. Suddenly the American people stand up and say, we need to do something with our borders. And the people in Texas right now are shouting at their governor and at their legislature about the sellout of their local freeways to a Spanish company that is going to impose a toll on all of them and bring goods without customs inspection from a dock in the middle of Mexico and into the middle of America.
Well, of course, you know, really the legislature there did what was right. They actually passed legislation, I think, overwhelmingly. I think there were only four votes against it, you know, against the highway. And then, of course, the governor vetoed the bill, and then there wasn't any adjourned the legislature, so they didn't have a chance to do anything, and they won't convene again for 2 years, and by that time the highway will be well underway. And what people don't understand is this is simply one step in this plan to unite Mexico, the United States, and Canada, to do away with our national sovereignty, to do away with our tariffs, to do away with our trade laws, and we will just be one big happy people, and we'll soon raise the living standards of the average American to that of the Mexican peasant, and we'll be just so happy, our average American here, to have the high living standards that they have for the peasants in Mexico. And people don't understand that this is being done intentionally, and certainly and the fact that most good people here in the United States have never heard this, because it's not covered in the media, it's not discussed. Have you heard Obama or Hillary or Giuliani or any of the others talk about this move to create a world government and to do away with American sovereignty, first of all, to join us together with Mexico and Canada, and then to begin to bring all of these various independent trade groups where sovereignty is gone together in this world government? And it's not discussed because they're all in favor of it. And the one thing they fear is the American people might learn what's going on and might be incensed to realize they're going to lose their sovereignty and perhaps even their lives.
Well, I know a lot of the listening audience are Ron Paul supporters. Congressman Paul knows about sustainable development. I would encourage listeners and contributors and supporters of Ron Paul to encourage him to bring this most crucial issue that I think America has ever faced out into the open public. Because as the people understand it, there's only a few hardcore fifth columners in this country that after exposure will continue to try to push this program. But without exposure, believe me, it has moved a long ways down the road. It is everywhere across this country and throughout the world. The political structure and the business structure necessary to make it happen are in place. But let me go back and describe, when I speak about the business, let me describe the fascist reference that I made a while ago and why I say public-private partnership is fascism. It is important in understanding sustainable development that the idea is to equalize, you said earlier, the spread of wealth between countries. And the idea will be, or has become, to cause American business to be dominated increasingly by multinational corporations. Take the labor offshore, dedicate slave labor, it doesn't matter. Corporations in partnership with the regional governing authorities, and they work to create things like the Trans-Texas Corridor, a highway system that will weave throughout the United States and cover the entire continent, which is to be free from trade barriers, bringing the flood of Chinese goods, supposedly raising the economic capacity of China, not for the Chinese person, but for the Chinese empire, while America begins to rot in its debt and the people become increasingly scarce as middle class
And I think it really doesn't make sense when you see what's going on. Why would our leaders want to destroy the middle class base of our country? Why would they want to destroy the industrial base of our country? Why would they be encouraging our corporations to move offshore out of Mexico to suddenly into China? And why would we have funded in large part the miracle of manufacturing that we see in China today? Why would you be creating the country which is potentially our enemy? Go right ahead there, Michael.
Well, sustainable development is a philosophy that's designed to bring human beings across the globe under the control of a human elite. Sustainable developers design a global movement coordinated through a global to local action plan. That's why it's so important to begin to investigate in your community what's happening. I mean, you first need to come to understand what sustainable development is so you can begin to recognize it, because it's creeped all through every county in this country. But the only way we can fight it, we can't fight it at the World Bank level or the United Nations level, you know, or George Bush's commitment or Bill Clinton's commitment to sustainable policy, and that's very well documented. You know, but we can fight it. The only way the global ring extends its control over us is by to invade us locally. And that's why when we understand their philosophy and we understand their policies, we can root them out county by county in America. The process is starting slow, but it's picking up. And it will continue to pick up as conditions continue to point to the reality that sustainable policy is bringing upon the American political, economic, and social well-being. So I think an increased understanding will happen, but what becomes important now is that we understand this early enough in the process that it doesn't overwhelm us before we come to understand what it is.
Well, of course, we can understand what we need, of course, is to get the vast majority of the people out there to understand they're being lied to by the media. I mean, how could it be that the entire media claims that there's global warming if it isn't true? And yet, all we need to do is look around Santa Cruz today with snow up on the summit. Certainly a freezing temperature, one of the coldest winters we've had in a long time. And yet, they keep telling us there's global warming, and people believe it. Doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe, especially when you control the media. And you can convince them through all of the media that global warming is a reality.
Well, the sustainable developers have a lot of tricks in their bag, and if they lost the global warming argument tomorrow, they wouldn't be slowed down because they're on so many other fronts. They'll just keep pushing those fronts. And so it's through this overwhelming dissemination of misinformation that many otherwise decent Americans have really become members of a fifth column seeking to overthrow the change necessary to destroy the American experience. We're very close to that as a result, which is why understanding sustainable development, we've got several brochures that, you know, succinctly put, can give you basic overriding information. So I encourage people to go to our website, read our articles. Some of them are longer and more expansive of the nature of sustainable development. And the pamphlets are great for disseminating in your local community. You know, in 10 or 20 pages, you can get a whole lot of information well-sourced, and you can go to further documentation if you want to see more. But the objectives of sustainable developers include the following. End to national sovereignty. It's the abolition of private property. And it's the restructure of the family unit. Now, people may say, oh, that couldn't be.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Michael Shaw. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Shaw. And he was just saying that, of course, the goal of sustainable development is to end national sovereignty and, of course, to restructure our society and, of course, then to restructure the family unit. Go right ahead, Michael.
Well, someone may say, oh, that sounds just scandal making, and all we need to do is look at the immigration issue or look at the Trans-Texas Corridor dynamic to see examples of how national sovereignty is being undone. It's the trade agreements that we enter into that undo the essence of a national authority, which is to determine economic policies as it hits and crosses border lines. And we've surrendered all of that to the World Trade Organization, you know, and the abolition of private property. If you don't see that, you need to come to understand what ranchers and what foresters and what farmers are experiencing. The complete taking of the forest in Santa Cruz Mountains for many of the landowners up there is just astonishing. They own timberland. They can no longer cut a tree. There's nothing else they can do. They're stuck paying taxes and waiting for the big fire to come burn them out. Their private property, that is an owner's determination of use, has been taken.
And, of course, these people on the other side don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in freedom. They've realized that if you can control private property, you control one of the basic pillars of freedom. And that's why they want to take away private property rights, and they've got all their zoning restrictions. And you just try to do something on your property and see what happens. And, of course, you're going to run into terrible opposition, you know, in many, many instances. Because there is an elite who want to tell you how to live your life. And, as long as you don't try to do anything, you're all right. We try to do something, why, they'll begin to control you, or try to cut down a tree downtown Santa Cruz, for instance. You'll have the neighbors there, telling how wonderful that tree is and how we can't take that tree down. And all sorts of rules and regulations on every aspect of life. And it may be your tree, it may be your property, it may endanger your home, but you don't have a right to cut it. Go right ahead, Michael.
Well, that's for sure. And if you want to question the issue about the restructure of the family unit, do get to understand what it is that schools across the country, not just in Santa Cruz with our UN clubs and baccalaureate associations, globalist baccalaureate associations, but schools everywhere. I was seeing a video today out of Fresno, a big expose of the teen screen, which happened here a few years ago, where really a psychologically manipulative program that comes into the schools, and if you're deemed not to have passed this manipulation, you're drugged. Understand what's going on in our schools, and there's a lot of good sources for that information in detail.
And how many of our kids are on Ritalin, and how many of them are on Prozac, and how many of them are on psychotropic drugs? Why would you want to put children on these sort of drugs, you know?
Ultimately, I'll say, Stan, it is to restructure the family unit.
And restructure our society, and of course this will have a profound effect on these children, many of them for life. You give a child Ritalin, it stunts their growth, it stunts the development of their brain. I mean, they may be fairly smart, but they probably would have been a lot smarter if they hadn't been placed on Ritalin. And they're doing it simply, well, they're much more manageable and much more placid. And yet, of course, how many of the shootings in the United States, school shootings, have been with children either on Ritalin or on Prozac or one of the other psychotropic drugs, and almost all of them have been. Even the fellow back there in Virginia was taking a psychotropic drug. We don't know what it is. They're not going to tell us, but they create homicidal tendencies many times, and they know that, and they keep putting our children on it. Why would they be doing that?
Well, you know, if one combines with that the fact that if you get into many schools today, and the social science department doesn't teach the nature of the American experience, doesn't talk about unalienable rights. Instead, you know, the smart kids are pushed into the UN club. So our children are being grown with a different worldview. And I've talked to so many parents who said, you know, good, decent people, they thought they were doing right sending their kids off to the local school. And then they say, as their children are adults, they break down and cry and say, we didn't understand what was happening, and now we see it.
Yeah, and of course, really, the purpose of our schools is not to educate, it's to indoctrinate, destroy belief in God and family and country, and of course, make people feel that they're part of the whole, part of this wonderful new one world order that's coming down the line. The new world order, the new world religion, the new world leader. And the children, impressionable, looking to authority, accept what their schoolmasters have told them, and then there's so many other things we're doing to influence their minds, so they really can't think clearly. And our kids, when they graduate from high school, can't compete on the average with kids from other countries. Well, our guest is Michael Shaw. Michael, go right ahead.
Well, just to finish on that last point, Dr. Stan, the Federal Department of Education has declared the decade 2006 to 2015 the decade of sustainable development education. So if you don't understand what sustainable development is, and you hear this discussion and it's kind of new, and you need to go somewhere, you can start at freedomadvocates.org. You spend a day on that website, and you'll have a good starting idea of what it is. And within a few more days of reading your local newspaper, you'll have an increased idea of how sustainable development is evidencing itself in your backyard. You've got to remember, if you're a globalist and you're sitting up there and you're now over in Davos, Switzerland, and you're in the White House, you have a problem, and that is, create this new globalist order, which the Bushes and the Clintons have sworn their allegiance to. How do you make it really happen? Well, you can have the World Trade Organization and the World Health Organization and the World Bank all working to implement sustainable objectives, but they can't do it sitting in their ivory towers. So what it takes is a global to local plan. That's what sustainable development is. It is the global to local action plan. There's tons of money. You know, listeners who understand the nature of the Federal Reserve knows that these globalist banking institutions have been making a yield on all the funny money they've created over the last near 100 years for that entire period of time. They've used that money wisely, bought up the media. They've bought up a lot of entertainment. They've gotten control of the Republican and the Democrat parties, and much more. But there's plenty of money to fund the global to local. Take down your neighbor's property right. Get the new wave teachers into the schools. Create the kinds of regulation control human action and abolish private property. It's a serious matter. Why don't more people pay more attention? Well, the good news is that more people are, because it's becoming easier to understand. You know, the objectives of sustainable developers are being achieved via 1,000 points of darkness that include the U.S. monetary policy.
Hold up. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Michael. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Shaw of Freedom Advocates. And before we go on, Michael, although I do want you to finish that thought, but I do want you, of course, to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your organization, your ministry, and of course, how they can get the great information that you make available that will help them to educate themselves and others about certainly what this whole idea of sustainable development is.
Well, our website is freedomadvocates.org, and the phone number is 831-684-2232. That's 831-684-2232. What I recommend to people is that they look at our website, begin to study it. We'll refer you to plenty of other places. Plenty of ways to confirm this information. I mean, source documents from the UN and source documents from the Department of State. We've got lots of video, lots of audio, and lots of writings. the information can be there. I think what one of the things we're going to want to start looking at, and, you know, I'll put this to the audience, is that people who can work, who either are or can work with teachers, to begin to present this information and its related information for as appropriate for age groups, and prepare curriculums that are predicated on the ideals of individual liberty, and show the contrast with the advancing social programs under sustainable development. So the curriculum can be prepared for, I don't know, fifth graders and 11th graders and college students, so that amongst all of this globalist training that they're receiving, you know, and population reduction indoctrination that they're being imbued with, that somewhere along the line they can have planted some very simple basic ideas about what individual liberty is really all about.
And, you know, of course, the thing is that you cannot have individual liberty and a program of sustainable development, because sustainable development is all about the control of the individual. Many of the people who, of course, embrace this think that this is a great way to get back at those big corporations that are actually polluting the world, you know, the oil companies and the fertilizer and the pesticide manufacturers, and here's how we're going to control them and get them to act responsibly, without ever realizing this whole scam was put together by those very people. It began with the Club of Rome over in Europe, and of course that is the wealthiest people of Europe, the industrialists of Europe. They came out in 1971 or 72 with a book called The Limits of Growth, and that call for sustainable development. And since then, of course, it was the people of great wealth, like the Al Gores of this world, intimately involved with Occidental Petroleum, pushing global warming, the threat of global warming. But some of the wealthiest people in the world, in fact, most of the wealthiest people in the world, are the ones behind this. Why? Because it's going to centralize all power with government, and they're going to control government. We will have the finest politicians that money could buy governing us. Go right ahead, Michael.
Well, you know, that's the economic E of sustainable development. It's public-private partnership, fascism. It's a combination of business and government. And when that happens, whether it's the government who's the 800-pound gorilla, or it's the big business that's the 800-pound gorilla, the idea is that you or anyone else as an individual or as an individual business person are squished without notice.
Amen to that. That certainly is true.
Now, in America, the globalist sustainable development movement is comprised of the Democrat Party leadership, Republican Party leadership, communist anarchists, I mean, they still are around, libertarian anarchists, Greens, public-private partnerships, as we've talked about, including many multinational corporations, socialists, neoconservatives, capitalists, third-way Fabians. By making that kind of a system for a political chart that ranges, you know, from the left to the right, take something of amazing vision, because they're able to claim that consensus amongst all the political types has been declared. The reality is that ordinary Americans will pay the price. The price is simple. It's the loss of our liberty. Sustainable development says that it's about it's about development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future needs to meet their own, future generations to meet their own needs. That language was lifted from the 1976 Soviet Constitution. It is the entire embodiment of the philosophy of sustainable development. But with that philosophy, if you imagine, 100 years ago, the government would have said, you can't use whale oil, because we've got to save it for people in the 21st century. Well, maybe the great inventions wouldn't have happened, because the smart little minds that were encouraged by light at night while they read would have had their rooms darkened so that we could save our resources for future generations, and so human beings aren't capable of creating new and better systems. So it's by taking away our oil, turning off our lights, quarantining and quotienting our water. It's about denying our ability to use our property. It's about instituting a new transportation system that calls for bikes and trains. And it's about the elimination of the automobile.
And that's really one of the major things they want to do is get the price of gasoline up so high, you're not going to be able to afford an automobile, and get the taxes on the car up so high, and the emission requirements up so high, so that only the elite will be able to have cars. And the rise in the price of oil is totally phony baloney, but it has been created. Why? Because you're going to see gasoline up to $8 to $10 a gallon. It's just a matter of when, not if. And why would they do that? Why, to get you out of your car. And they know exactly what they're doing. Why do you think they've done away with incandescent light bulbs, and we're all going to have to get these new mercury-filled light bulbs full of poison? But why are they doing that? Shutting down the light bulb industry in the United States because all the incandescent bulbs, almost all of them, are made over in China? Well, to conserve electricity. Why is there a shortage of electricity? Oh, we're running out of electricity. We're running out of water. We're running out of air. Suddenly we've just got to conserve. And I mean, it's so ridiculous. It's so easy to produce electricity so cheaply, and yet they're running the price up intentionally in the name of conservation. Oh, we've got to conserve electricity. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, let's shift out into a bigger picture, because I want to leave the audience with some sense of the breadth of what sustainable development represents. So let's find some circumstances that help link the globalist dots operating in America today. I think the first and most powerful illustration goes right to the nature of our money. Since I was a young fella, you know, I've always called it funny money. I learned early that if you're going to make money in this world, the way to do it is to borrow first issue money and leverage yourself as high as you can. Well, the reason the system works like that and encourages that reaction is because the U.S. Federal Reserve notes have no real backing. That's why I call them funny money. The notes are simply decreed. They're printed, and therefore they're called fiat. Now, throughout history, fiat money has always ended in failure. So I ask a couple questions. I say, how long before the Federal Reserve or a successor issues new American currency? We certainly see the dollar being beat up a lot in the last 6 months. You know, maybe that's just a wrenching out of the malinvestment. Or maybe it's the condition that finally the dollar can't be controlled by the forces that make it out of thin air. Or maybe the forces that make it out of thin air are seeking to bring it down. That they can do, but the fall of fiat money is built into the system itself. So when we understand the nature of our money, it'll wake up people to what program the money folks have been working on in order to put us in our cages that smart growth has designed for us. Now, what would destruction of today's fiat dollar bring to ordinary people? I think we need to ask ourselves, would it lead to repressive and controlling changes in our form of government? And if we think it might, and if we study sustainable development, we'd be inclined to believe that it would lead to a destruction of our way of life. Then I say, it's time we do something now rather than just leave our kids in chains. Because sustainable development is about world tyranny. So I think to understand that first dot, money, there's a couple ways to bring yourself to where you need to be understanding that issue. One way is watching Aaron Russo's movie American Freedom to Fascism, and the other way is through Ed Griffin's marvelous and thoroughly entertaining, except that it's so serious, book called The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Which incidentally is available for Radio Liberty. We think it's a great book, and if you ask for it, we'll give you a CD or a taped interview with Ed Griffin if you get the book to us. Go right ahead.
Well, good. We at Freedom Advocates, we have both that movie and the book as well, but we don't have the free tape. With the you outdid us on that one, Stan.
We'd be glad to provide you the copy of the tape, and you can duplicate it if you'd like.
Well, that's sweet of you. We'll take you up on that.
All right.
The second way to link the dot is to really understand the effort to abolish private property. As our economic system changes from free enterprise to public-private partnership, it becomes real clear with about 5 minutes of thought that that is about the abolition of private property. Hitler had a system of partnering with corporations. There was no free enterprise in Germany in the 1930s. And that's the system that is being replicated for us today here in America. George Washington said it succinctly, private property and freedom are inseparable. Understand what's happening to farmers. Here in the Paro Valley, their heroic battle to save their water as a water agency began to tax them exorbitant amounts of money to pull water from their own well. The farmers have litigated and won that lawsuit, one of the rare big wins that have been coming out of courts lately. But that one's a huge one. There's some other very big ones, but if we have time, I'll get to them later in the discussion. A third way to understand the big picture is to recognize the advance of so-called communitarian law, because that's what's moving us from equal justice to a system of social justice. And that's being done so to meet the equity requirements of sustainable development. They have a little sing-song chart that they do. They call it the three E's of sustainable development. Those are equity, economy, and environment. By equity, they mean the system of justice. So what communitarian principles do is change those systems of justice such that justice is now handed out to groups instead of protected for an individual. Now, I don't know who, whether they want to call themselves liberals or conservatives, I don't know any American who would say that they want the system of justice to transform from individual protection to group protection. You know, that means we've all got to belong to a group, and it better be the right group, or your rights are lost. That's the system of justice we're moving toward. That's the system that is being perpetuated by the politicians we elect and the judges they appoint. So that's where the big change in the political dynamic needs to occur. But a fourth concept for linking these dots is to understand the educational indoctrination that's going on in schools everywhere. Here in Santa Cruz, I've been saying for some while that the California legislature had mandated the teaching of some environmental principles in every class, in every subject, at every grade in California. Well, in May of this year, the Santa Cruz County Office of Education announced its plans to include environmental principles in all subject areas in all grades.
In other words, they're going to indoctrinate our children in this whole concept of environmentalism. And really, of course, eventually this leads to total government control over everything, because every problem we have today with the environment can be solved by a new series of government laws.
Well, that's right. The environment is the third E that's used to cover up the transformation of our system of justice and the transformation of our system of economics, from free enterprise to public-private partnership. Oh, but all of that's okay, is what the sustainable developers will argue, because we're here to save the earth. And that's why we get all the stories about these threats that the earth is facing. You know, like, gee whiz, it's supposed to be getting warmer. It was below zero at that football game in Wisconsin this weekend, and And like you said earlier today, Stan, it snowed here on the coast of California.
But, of course, we have global warming. If you don't believe it, why, you just go to the newspapers, and everything they do are 60-minute presentations. We'll tell you we've got global warming. And certainly the ice caps are melting on Mars, and so obviously we've got a real problem here on Earth.
Well, it gets as basic as, you know, when I was a child, I knew that it was either getting warmer or cooler. You know, and I'm not that old, but I've heard the scientific community first say it was getting cooler, and now say it's been getting warmer for 100 years. So the credibility is somewhat at risk, and particularly when one begins to understand that those scientists who are lapdogging to the global warming man-made hysteria are all scientists being paid by NGOs or international organizations dedicated to the sustainable development implementation. So that's why, again, we've got to understand it, because then we can see all the connections and link all the dots.
And well, of course, go to freedomadvocates.org. Is that .org or .com?
.org. .org, yeah.
Freedomadvocates.org. Certainly Michael has wonderful information there. You need to have it. You need to understand what this is about. You're never going to hear it discussed by Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, some of the finest conservative commentators money can buy. But you need to understand there is a plan. And in the end, of course, you will lose everything. You'll be impoverished, and they will destroy the industrial base of this country. If we were to sign the Kyoto Protocol, that's what it's really all about. It's an attack on Western civilization. Because remember, the Kyoto Protocol covers us. It doesn't cover China. I wonder why. Well, Michael, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I would say that what I'd encourage listeners to do is to get to where you understand what sustainable development philosophy is. And then you begin to take note of where it's in your community. We all wait too long. We won't have time to react before the curtain comes down, and life in America could become very different from anything that we or our forefathers have experienced. We've been playing with danger with this globalist routine, from the trade policy to the legal harmonization policy to the continental union making, to the war policy that goes behind it, to the monetary policy that built it. We've been a little too lax for way too long, for generations too long. We're now down to, you know, baby boomers don't clean up the mess that we in part made. Before our time is up, our children are going to pay one huge price. And everybody's beginning to sense that something's off. You know, when we talked about this a few years ago, people were still pretty focused on their American dream pursuit and weren't willing to listen to how it was being undermined. But that confidence has begun to shake. And people now are more inclined. And all I suggest to those listening is that make the dedication yourself to find out what sustainable development is. Be able to prepare yourself and your family for whatever consequences may come. But most importantly, know what it is so that together we can fight it as its impacts grow upon us. Because that's the way that our children and their children are going to live in a kind of society that we and our forefathers enjoyed, that they worked so hard to secure. And now we, the baby boom generation, are ready to let the whole experience slip through our fingers. So come to understand sustainable development. We're there to help you. And we'll do what we can to accomplish just that.
All right, do you have a telephone number there?
It's 831-684-2232.
One more time.
831-684-2232.
Well, this is an excellent source of information. We recommend it to you. Get the information, study the information, and help Michael and I get it disseminated. Bye-bye. Good night. God bless.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope that you enjoyed the conversation with Michael Shaw. And, of course, if you'd like to know more about sustainable development, first of all, we have a syllabus, an excellent syllabus, that goes with either our four-tape set or our video or DVD on sustainable development, the road to world government. Sustainable development, the road to world government. That's what it's all about. And then, of course, you need to get a copy of the Earth Charter. There is one in the Sustainable Development Syllabus, along with a summary of the Population Control Agenda monograph and the plan for eliminating most of the people in the Global Biodiversity Assessment and taking away your car. This is published by Cambridge University Press. It's 1,142 pages, but we have it summarized down to about 40 pages. And certainly there's nothing quite like our Sustainable Development Syllabus. We recommend it to you. And then you should get the video or DVD, Sustainable Development, the Road to World Government, and the four-tape set on sustainable development. We have an excellent DVD on global warming put out by our friend Michael Kaufman, and other DVDs put out called The New World Order. We think they're both excellent, and we have a four-tape set on global warming. And then, of course, if you really don't think that they have a plan for concentration camps, we actually suggest that you get our four-tape set on concentration camps or see the amazing clips, which is something Dave Wegner has put together, available on DVD or on the video. And then, of course, we have concentration camp special. You can actually get that. There's another video called America Behind Barbed Wire. Get the special, and you'll get other material with this as well. There really is a plan for concentration camps. If you'd like to request the article on Halliburton being given $385 million a year to stand by for 4 years, ready to build those new concentration camps at any time, it's real. It's not imaginary. These people have a different worldview, because they worship a different God. So certainly you have to understand that behind all of this are powerful spiritual forces. Certainly you want to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy that rules the world. And of course, you have to realize there is a supernatural element that motivates many of these people, knowingly or unknowingly, as we move from freedom towards fascism and ultimately towards the total destruction of Western civilization. There really are people who hate America, and of course many of them are at the highest levels of our government. They want to do away with our sovereignty, they want to do away with our freedom, and you can only understand this if you understand the spiritual aspect of what's going on. That's why the pamphlets are the occult hierarchy. There are three of them, they're inexpensive, and they're very, very important. And then of course we certainly hope that many of you will want to get our talk on the Forbidden Secret. If you haven't seen it, it's on DVD, and there's a syllabus that goes with that. That's the Forbidden Secret. What's the Forbidden Secret? Why, it's the secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years and explains everything going on today. And of course, is the four-tape or four-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret, exposing Rhonda Byrne's effort to recruit people into her movement, along Oprah Winfrey, Larry King. They've all given Rhonda Byrne's help. She sold millions of copies of her DVD and millions of copies of her book, and she tells you the truth there, at least according to her. This wonderful power that you can have if you tap into this other force, because you are God. And you may say, well, that's crazy talk. Well, it may be crazy talk. Unfortunately, there are millions of people who have bought into what Rhonda Byrne have said, and they've tried her techniques, and they work, and they're so enthused about it. But, of course, they do not understand the force that they've tapped into. You need to get the DVDs or videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. And then, of course, call us at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and then please pray for America, pray for revival, because this really is a spiritual battle, and then please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection, and we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour of Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And, well, hopefully this hour we're going to have Brad Dacus with us from the Pacific Justice Institute telling us, or Pacific Justice Foundation, telling us what's happening on the legal field, because he deals with cases that, where they, of course, are talking about persecution of Christians. And, of course, you have to understand anything going on today, that there is a conspiracy against Christianity. There's an organized effort to take God and prayer out of our schools, to take God and prayer out of our society, to prevent military chaplains from praying in the name of Jesus, when they're in the military, taking the name of Jesus out of the military, destroying the Christian foundation of our military is the best way to destroy the military, and they know exactly what they're doing. Why do you think they don't want to have a cross displayed publicly? Why do you think that they don't want to have a nativity scene? Why do you think they've taken the Christ out of Christmas? There is a conspiracy against Christianity, and when you understand that, then you can begin to understand what's really going on in the world today. Well, now, on the front line of the battle to counter that, and of course, in many respects, we're only buying time, but at least we're buying time, and we're protecting the Christians who have the courage to speak up while we still can. On the front lines of that battle is our good friend Brad Dacus. Hi, Brad. How are we doing?
Oh, we're doing just great.
And, of course, the Pacific Justice, is it the foundation or?
Institute, Pacific Justice
Institute. Okay, the Pacific Justice Institute is really Brad Dacus. So, Brad, tell us what's going on today. What new forms of harassment have they come up with for Christians?
Well, I think a major one that is, of course, dealing with, on the legislative side, it was SB 777. I'm sure you're very familiar with that. That's the legislation that is basically going to be a major threat to parents' rights with regard to their children. Specifically, it in essence will mandate schools and teachers all throughout California, public school teachers, and even some private schools that are deemed non-religious, to teach students to have favorable attitudes, embracing homosexual lifestyles and transsexual lifestyles. And
is this the one where they no longer going to have mention of mother and father?
Yeah, that would be
that suggests you have to have a male and a female to have a family.
Right, because that would be, according to the law, would be a statement of bias with regards to sexual orientation. Of course, you can't have that. So they're going to, if you say mother and father in any context, you'd also have to say mother and father or father and father or mother and mother. And, the polygamists don't have a foothold yet, but if they were, added on, then you'd have to say mother and several fathers or father and several mothers. And, it just shows the ludicrousy of what they're trying to do to invade the domain of parents and families, and that domain is dealing with not academics, but it's dealing with the moral and values of children. That is something reserved to the family, not something for the state, through George Orwellian 1984 style philosophy to start engaging it.
But of course, what they're doing really is encouraging the homosexual lifestyle, which is really a death style.
It is.
Homosexuals die very young. Why would anybody in their right mind be pushing something like that, and why would the legislators vote for it? Because they're not in their right mind. That, when you understand, is the essence of what's going on. Well, Brad, is this now the law? Did our courageous governor sign that law? Sign that bill into law?
Oh, yeah, he did. He signed it into law. And in fact, now what we're faced with is an initiative that's going to be hopefully on the ballot. We've got to get enough signatures to get on the ballot. And Capital Resource Institute is leading the charge on that. And the good news is that we'll have twice as much time. See, initially, there were signatures being gathered to just simply repeal that law. And of course, the disadvantage there is if you just repeal it, then the legislature can come and enact it all over again. They came close to getting the signatures, but they're 20% short, and they only had 50 days to do it, which included Christmas time, which is a hard time to get signatures. Well, now they filed it as an initiative, and now they have more than twice the amount of time to get the signatures, and they're going to have it distributed over the internet. We at Pacific Justice are going to help with that. And as an initiative, it cannot be repealed by the legislature. So there's a real strong advantage to having it this way.
And of course, what are they going to say is that you cannot encourage the homosexual lifestyle. I mean, if homosexuals want to be homosexual, we can't stop them in a free society. But they don't want a free society. They want to forcibly, by the power of legislation, to change the attitude of our children towards homosexuality. They think it's just that another way of living, and it's not. I mean, you talk to the homosexuals as I have, and they are miserable. They really are. And most of them will, if they're honest with you, will tell you they hate what they are, but they don't know how to get out of it.
Right.
Why would then we want to recruit more people into this lifestyle? And then, of course, if we read the Bible and we believe in it, God brings judgments upon nations that do this. And has anybody really thought about that? Have any of our legislators thought of the spiritual implications of what they're doing? Have they ever read the Bible about Sodom and Gomorrah, or certainly what happened to other societies that have turned away from God? Certainly, it doesn't have to be only homosexual. It can be heterosexual. You've ever been to Corinth there in Greece and seen what happened to this area, which was totally hedonistic. And you look today, and there's just a few little pillars around, and this great city of Corinth, which was once the center of hedonism in Greece, is simply gone because God destroyed that city as he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Are you going to be able to get this initiative through, do you think?
I think so. I definitely do. If people are united like they were last time, the last go-round to...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Brad Jacobson. He's talking about this legislation, Senate Bill 777. But basically, it's been enacted, been signed by Arnold Schwarzenegger, and no longer than in school can we talk about mother and father. Oh, no, that's sexist. Well, we got to tell how wonderful homosexuality is. It's perfectly normal, happy lifestyle, gay lifestyle, and of course, but of course, fortunately, Capital Resources, which of course is an extension of the or affiliated with the Dobson Ministry, is going to be circulating an initiative, petitions for an initiative, and they hope to get this initiative on the ballot. And then it doesn't matter what these turkeys, these people up in Sacramento, these people who really don't represent anybody but their own biased and depraved interests, they wouldn't be able to undo what the people have done through the initiative process. And whether you believe in the initiative or not, once in a while we need it, and here's a place where we really do. So what can our listeners do to help you get that information together and get it get those petitions signed?
Yeah, I think that the key is going to be for, like I say, for people to have the petition distributed at their church or their synagogue. That's going to be, I think, the most important thing to do it. Also, is to have a table set up in front of your Home Depots, your Lowe's, your supermarkets, your Walmarts. I think that's also another important thing to have done. And if everyone gets behind it, this will send a large shot off the bow, so to speak, to the other side, that and to our liberal legislator, that if they try to adopt these kind of laws, they're going to expect the parents of families of California to unite to correct it.
Well, I think it's a great idea, and certainly I really think that I'm glad we have the leadership up there, and I'm glad that you know that you're going to be working with the Capital Resource Organization.
Yeah, we're very pleased to be working with them, and in the other organizations that are a part of it, and really making a difference. You know, we at Pacific Justice Institute try to work hard with all organizations out there and that are truly united to make a difference. It's a privilege for us to be able to do that. And another initiative that's coming down is dealing with the state actually the constitutional amendment for California, and that's the Defense of Marriage initiative on the ballot, and signatures are being gathered in that regard. And we at Pacific Justice Institute are encouraging people to get involved in that. And if they want to get petitions, they can contact Pacific Justice Institute, and we'll be happy to forward them to the proper place to get them.
All right, fine. Now, is Randy Thomason involved in that?
No, he's not involved in that one. Instead, it's with some other organizations working together, united, that are making a real difference in this one.
All right, fine.
And I think that should be on the ballot this November.
All right, fine. So that'll be November of this year. How long do you have to get the signatures in on that one?
I think they've got another 60 days to go on it. And so people, if they want to, get signatures for petitions for either or both of them, actually, they should not hesitate to contact Pacific Justice Institute and just leave their information, their name, their address, et cetera, an email address, and we'll be happy to get them that information.
Well, I think we're lucky to have, organizations in America that will take a stand. And how can they get in touch with the Pacific Justice Institute?
There's two ways. One is via our email, our webpage, which is pji.org, and there's a way to you click to contact us, and you can do that. The other way is just simply to call us, and to contact Pacific Justice, we'll give our toll-free number. It's 888-305-9129. That's 888-305-9129.
All right, fine. Now, certainly, have they been able to get this sort of legislation through in other parts of the country, or is California unique as far as this legislation that's going to more or less do away with references to mother and father or the conventional family, because all families are equal, and so, instead of having Adam and Eve, we'll have Adam and Steve, and of course, we'll have Ellen DeGeneres and her, her partner will be examples of the female sort of families, and what we're doing is destroying God's plan for men and women to get together and to reproduce, because no matter what you say, it's pretty hard for two males to reproduce a child. They can get a child in, but those poor children that grown up in homosexual families, so often their whole outlook on the world is warped.
Yeah, exactly. This is California is new ground. This is new ground, and California is trying to lay that new ground for other states to follow.
Why did Arnold Schwarzenegger do this? He knew that this would be unpopular with a vast majority of the good moral people in this country and in our state. Why would he risk his political reputation to do something that he had to know was going to have repercussions? And I will tell you that if I have a choice of voting for a Democrat or voting for a Republican, when he next time he runs, I know which one I'm going to vote for.
Right. Yeah. Well, he... as it turns out, he vetoes a lot of these pro-homosexual bills, but I think he sort of plays the middle, so he'll veto most, but then he'll sign one or two, and then in next year he'll veto most, sign one or two. And I think he's sort of playing to both audiences, and I think politically that's it's not wise to do so, because you really just isolate both. But morally and ethically, it shows a clear lack of conviction and understanding of the real ramifications and repercussions of what these bills are about. So it is disappointing. This governor, while he may have some good policies and some good fiscal measures perhaps, He does not have, obviously, any kind of depth of conviction on these social issues. It's just a matter of looking at, the phone, counting the number of calls that come in, and who's pushing the strongest from a lobbying perspective.
Well, I think he should be able to count the people of this state and see how many are homosexuals who would support this, and how many, of course, would support traditional families. And I think that this would be the overwhelming of people, whether they're Republicans or Democrats in this state. I think the vast majority would be against this legislation. To do away with the concept of mother and father, not be allowed to talk about mother and father, you know, in that context, or the traditional family, and of course include the homosexual families as traditional families. What sort of depravity is this that's taken over our state?
Yeah, oh, I know. It is serious, and the sad thing is we're talking about public schools and public school children all the way down to kindergarten, preschool, actually. That's a very high concern. That's why my children are not in public schools.
And, of course, the thing is that we're talking about a state that is bankrupt. I mean, we're going to be behind $3 billion this year and $14 billion shortfall for next year. And where is the money going to come from? Well, of course, the governor is going to try cutting everything to make up for the shortfall. He's going to start turning prisoners loose, 20,000 nonviolent criminals. Going to turn loose, going to fire 6,000 prison personnel to get money. And, of course, I'm not saying that I'm totally against trying to do something as far as government spending. But, you know, what they've done when Schwarzenegger became the governor, our budget was between 90 and $100 billion. I think it was about $93 billion. He's been there for 4 years. The budget is now $140 billion. And this man's supposed to be conservative. How could you increase the budget almost 50% in 4 years and then try to convince people you're conservative?
that's a very good question. And I think, frankly, I think many Americans, not just Republicans, but actually a lot of Democrats out there are really fed up with the fiscal irresponsibility and the tax and spend strategies of our politicians. I mean, the Democrats are known for their taxing and spending, but the Republicans have been known for spending. And so they're both... there's a lot of discouragement. I think that the on the Republican side, though, I think that they're going to be really tightening up and tightening up their positions to make it very clear that they are once again going to be the fiscal conservatives that they were supposed to be in the first place. So I think this election will be interesting to see how they shore up that image that has been lost over the last several years.
And why do you think it's really so tragic that the average individual has no knowledge of what's really going on? They don't remember what the budget was when Schwarzenegger got into office. They don't understand. He's increased it almost 50% in 4 years. That's quite an accomplishment. I mean, Gray Davis never was able to accomplish something like that. And yet,
yeah.
Of course, and right now, of course, California is the seventh largest economy in the entire world. The seventh largest economy in the entire world. If we were a nation, we'd be number seven here in California. But, of course, we're also facing bankruptcy. And, of course, as the economy, if the economy continues contracting and the taxes, both the income tax and capital gains tax, and then the sales tax and other taxes, the gasoline tax began contracting, where is the money going to come for all these wonderful programs we offer for everybody here in California? Increase taxes and a lot of people leave the state. And then, of course, you get less money. Increase taxes, a lot of corporations leave the state, and then you get less money. So they're really in sort of a lose-lose proposition. But that's really what happens to any governmental structure that turns its back on God. And could there be any question that the people in the state legislature have turned their back on God and His commandments? We'll be right back in just a moment with Brad Dacus here at Radio Liberty. Well, Brad, okay, is there anything else we want to talk about there? Do you have some other exciting things going on you'd like to bring to our attention?
Oh, I do. I like to shift, if I can, to some of the case matters and issues we've been dealing with. One is what happened just recently in Huntington Beach, and we just sent out our press releases on this. And, in fact, if people aren't receiving our press releases via email, they can do that very easily by going to our website, which is simply pji.org, pji.org, and just click Stay Up to Date, and they can get these press releases. Well, the one that came out today was dealing with the Huntington Beach, California, the Huntington Beach Union High School District. And what here's what happened this last spring. Some parents were appalled when they found out that some sophomores were shown movies, the movie Chicago and Little Miss Sunshine, in their choir class without any advance warning to the parents at all.
This was the choir class?
Yeah, yeah. They were shown movies, you know, public school style, of course, wasting taxpayer dollars, really not caring about the progress and development of kids. Instead, they just, you know, they show movies. So, you know, I've seen public schools do this, and it's a shame because there's not academic accountability and merit systems like they have in other states like Texas. But anyway, so this school district showed these films. Now, I'm going to fill the audience in and on this, I'm just going to tell them what it showed. They may not like, I mean, this may be a little coarse, but they need to know. The movie Little Miss Sunshine contained more than 30 F words. It depicts a police officer being bribed with pornography and casts as the main character a grandfather who snorts heroin and badgers his teenage son to get more sexually involved, and his 7-year-old granddaughter to become a striptease routine for a beauty pageant. That has no place in public schools. It's garbage. It's not reality. You know, grandfathers don't do that kind of garbage, and it's just totally inappropriate. You know, grandfathers encourage their sons to wait, most usually to wait till they're married, and to show respect for your future wife, and et cetera, et cetera. So this is just a total distortion, and it's just kind of garbage that causes young people to do the wrong thing and to make the wrong decisions. And there's another film, you know, had partial nudity in it, and some other things that I won't even go into for the sake of the radio, but anyway, that's what was shown. And when the parent, you know, my parents complained that nothing was done, and then she contacted the Civic Justice Institute, and Dr. Stanley, what we did is we went and represented her before the school board. We brought the issue before the school board, and we made it very clear that they need to take immediate corrective action or face the consequences in court from our organization. The good news is that this school board, at their last meeting, voted they have to do two votes, but the first vote, they voted 4-0 to no longer allow R-rated movies to be shown in their public schools.
Why would they have ever allowed R-rated movies to be shown?
Oh, I know. It's,
are they going to take any action against the administrators or the teachers involved in making this decision? Because the only reason you'd show a motion picture like that would be to corrupt the very soul of the children.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, there's some good public school teachers out there, but, you know, a lot of them, you know, their values are not what many parents would want for their children. Their lifestyles and values are irreprehensible.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Brad was just telling us about what happened in the Huntington Beach School District at the Union High School. And, of course, what happened was that at the choir, they showed children R-rated films. One of them was A Little Miss Sunshine, a film, of course, where the 7-year-old daughter was doing stripteases, the grandfather was snorting heroin and cocaine and was encouraging his grandson to become sexually involved, and apparently there was all sorts of depravity in this. This was an R-rated film that they're showing to the children in the choir without the knowledge of the parents, and also the film Chicago, which had some nudity and other things in it, and of course the language in the Little Miss Sunshine, certain words were used, four-letter words were used over and over again. Now, why would you show this to children without the parents' consent, without the child's knowledge ahead of time, unless you're trying to corrupt their soul? And there really are people who do want to corrupt our children. R-rated films in high school. You know, if you want to show a film, there are lots of sound and music or something like that. Of course, what we really ought to be doing is sending our kids to school to learn reading, writing, and arithmetic. And if you're going to have choir, why ought to teach them about choir? But well, anyway, apparently Brad had represented one of the concerned parents before the school board, and the school board had voted, 4-0 that this was not going to be allowed to happen again. Is that correct, Brad?
Yeah, that is correct. There's one more. They have to vote again the next meeting to finalize it, but it looks like it will be voted on. Now, one little side note, caveat here: these parents that stood up for their daughter, their young daughter, they have received at least one death threat from someone who's called them, there's been a lot of animosity, a lot of hatred, coming, I think, from the teachers' union, those who have a different philosophy. I mean, I don't have a definite proof it's from the teachers' union, but usually when a parent stands up to a school, it's usually activists from the teachers' union that seem to be the opposition or active members of the teachers' union.
And I think what people have to understand, there really are people out there who want to corrupt the morals and destroy the soul of our children. And when you understand that, these things make sense. And this is why, if you love your children or grandchildren, get them out of public schools any way that you can. But they'd be better off sitting at home or going to work or something than being exposed to this sort of thing and destroying their very souls. Go
right
ahead.
And Dr. Stanley, let me say, growing up, I've had nothing but public school education from kindergarten all the way through law school. Nothing but public school education, and you know what? It's gotten a lot worse. I understand what it is, but there's no way that I would allow my children to have public school education in the state of California. I'll qualify it by saying, at least in the state of California, because I know too much. I know now what's in the state curriculum and what's being pushed top to bottom in the state of California. And I would choose some other alternative, like homeschooling or private schooling or something. But, and parents who are in that situation where they don't feel like they have an option, I just really encourage them to pray and just to seek God's direction on what their options are, particularly if they're in a school district that is obviously not, parent sensitive.
And I certainly agree with you. In fact, we carry actually an entire a curriculum from kindergarten all the way through high school, and very inexpensive. It's all on CDs, where the child actually teaches themselves. But you can get them, they can do this at home. It doesn't take a lot of time on the parents' part, but this is carefully designed by a couple. Both were PhDs at the University of Southern California, and they use this with their 6 children or 5 children, and they've been just turned out great. And I've talked to the kids, and there's all the difference in the world between a homeschooled child and one that goes to public school. And you can see the change in them once they go from a private school into the public school, and it's not a change for the better. So there are lots of things that can be done if you really care about your children, if you really love your children, but you cannot turn them over to public education, because there really are people there who want to corrupt our children. This is not all teachers, but there's some of them who do, and they unfortunately will have the support usually of people in administration, because they have a different worldview. They march to a different drumbeat. They worship a different God. And if you want to corrupt our children, what better way than in our public schools? And you destroy their faith in God and in family and in country, and get them involved in sex. And I wonder if that may be why we have 60 million people in America, 60 million, with a sexually transmitted viral disease. Now, that, of course, ignores the chlamydia and the gonorrhea and the syphilis and all the other sexually transmitted diseases. Just as the viral diseases, 60 million of them, a direct result of our educational system and the sex education and depravity being practiced today. Well, this is Dr. Stan in Sydney. Our guest this evening is Brad Dacus. We're talking about what's going on in California, but similar things are going on all across the country. We've heard this from people back in New Jersey, and people all across the country have similar stories. But Brad, of course, is an expert of what's going on in California because he's on the front lines of the battle with the Pacific Justice Institute. So go right ahead. Any other issues you'd like to talk about?
Oh, yes, definitely. I wanted to also mention a bill that we testified it was AB 1498, one of our staff attorneys, really dynamite staff attorney, who, by the way, was homeschooled, was Matt McReynolds. He testified before the California State Legislature recently in support of this AB 1498, which was written to ensure that faith-based organizations, like Christian colleges, for example, receiving government grants for social services or that they provide, could be a Christian homeless ministry, for example, that they would be allowed to continue making hiring and membership decisions based on their beliefs and not be required to have to hire, homosexuals and people engaging in lifestyles that are totally against the beliefs and teachings of their faith and what they're about. The intolerant left, the state legislature, like Sheila Kuehl and others, had pushed for the passage of a bill, SB 1441, which would do just that. It would require all nonprofit organizations, or receiving any kind of government grants, even if it's a religious nonprofit organization, that they require them to hire and not discriminate against homosexuals or anyone else engaging in any of those kinds of behaviors and lifestyles, irrespective of the beliefs and convictions of right and wrong by those religious institutions. And some people say, well, fine, just don't let them have any kind of state grants. But the problem is, when we're talking about Christian colleges and institutions like that, it's a major, major handicap to say that those engaging in public service that are religious, that they're going to be handicapped and not have the same opportunity to have an impact as non-religious institutions. And that's what we're seeing being implemented now in California. The ACLU, by the way, and American Jewish Separatist Church and State, Equality California, they all spoke on the other side. They don't want religious organizations, institutions, to have equal treatment, and they want them to be forced to promote homosexuality.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Brad is talking about how one of his staff attorneys had testified before the state legislature on AB 1498, and this had to do with the fact that Christian institutions could discriminate when they were hiring. And of course, there was legislation there to try to keep Christian institutions from being able to discriminate. In other words, if you're a Christian institution, you get any money from government under any guise. Why, of course, you would have to hire homosexuals or transgressors or people that Sydney had, philosophies entirely opposite to yours, perhaps atheists who would use that position to undermine your organization. I mean, why would a Christian organization want to be forced to hire an atheist, somebody who hated Christianity, and yet you could not discriminate based upon their outlook or their views or their sexual orientation? Well, what happened with the legislation? Because there's one piece of legislation that advocated no discrimination, and then, of course, you wanted to say people ought to have a right to hire who they want to.
That's right, especially faith-based organizations and providing educational social services. Right. Well, the one saying we gotta require everyone out there, all these religious social organizations, to hire homosexuals and approve it, that passed, and that's the law right now presently. And so this other bill we were offering to correct it, AB 1498, that was shot down and defeated 5-3 with two abstentions, with the Democrats to control the state legislature, those institutions of faith have very little footing and groups like them and the Christian colleges and the Boy Scouts, they just have no protection from this legislature that is out to get them, and it's clearly out to get them. Church-affiliated organizations and groups. So that's what we're facing here in California, and fortunately we still have a U.S. Constitution, which will keep some of it in check, but it's not going to prevent things like this from becoming law.
And unfortunately, we have people up there who have a whole different worldview, and until you understand that the people who control our state legislature really do not believe in Christian values, do not believe that you and I should have equal rights, we should be able to hire who we want to and fire who we want to. But you're not allowed to do that. Oh, my goodness, no. And now the legislation is that faith-based institutions are going to have to hire people who have an entirely different worldview. And of course, you know, if you don't hire them, you've got to prove that you did not discriminate. And how can you ever prove that? And you can be tied up in court, you know, and lose a tremendous amount of money, and you could be sure that the ACLU will be there to bring suit against you, and you're going to have to put up your own money to defend yourself. And this will give them the ability to destroy faith-based institutions, won't it, Brad?
Oh, it will. That's what they want to do. They want to silence and stifle them and minimize their impact. And of course, faith-based organizations want the opposite. They want to be a salt and light and serve to meet all the needs that are out there educationally, socially, and you know that's what they want to do, and that's the real spiritual battle taking place.
Of course, do they have to be taking money from the state, or is this just any organization?
No, it's any organization receiving any kind of state grants or state funds. But you know, obviously, there's a lot of churches that don't receive any state grants or funds, you know, for obvious reasons. But there are wonderful programs out there sponsored by, you know, like, for example, Christian colleges, universities, faith-based homeless shelters, you know, service programs, medical institutions that do take state grants and funding. You know, otherwise they would not be competitive, and they would be not be able to carry out what they do and to do it well.
Okay, so I personally believe that we should never take money from government, no matter how appealing it may be.
Well,
I think, of course, this whole idea that the government is going to finance us because they just love us, and no, of course, the government is going to finance us so they can control of us, and when are people going to understand
right. That
they're going to have to make sacrifices, but it's better to be able to live as a free person than, of course, live a very abundant life, but be enslaved by the wicked.
Well, I'll just say that, Dr. Stein, this is a classic example of why you have that position, because that is exactly what the state is now trying to do with those programs that are receiving state funds. So it's unjust what they're doing, but that is, you hit the nail right on the head. And it's not even a theory or a conjecture. It's a reality now in California. That's exactly what they're trying to do. And institutions do need to make that decision because they need to think ahead and realize that they have an enemy in the form of a state legislature and to some degree a governor, and this is the kind of oppression that they can expect in the form of state grants and state funding. And in California, at least presently. Now, something else has come up. I think it's an interesting case matter. It's involving a Catholic hospital in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's being sued by a transgender person. It's a man. They're being sued for declining to assist a sex change with breast enlargement surgery. The man works in San Francisco. He had a sex change, you know, surgery, and was planning to have another surgery next month to feminize his nose, and he wanted to have his breast enlargement, but his plastic surgeon said that the Catholic Hospital Seton Medical Center in Daly City did not allow sex change operations in keeping with its clear Catholic beliefs. Now, this Catholic hospital, they're not just trying to use it as an excuse. They have clear beliefs. They also don't engage in euthanasia. They don't engage in abortions. I mean, they are clearly true to their Catholic faith, and they were founded in 1893 by the Daughters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul. So they have clear convictions on it. Well, they're being sued. And we at the Pacific Justice Institute found out about this, and have contacts to hospital and their legal counsel and offered to serve and assist them, because we've handled similar case matters like this where institutions are being wrongfully challenged because of their faith and their convictions.
Well, because this the depravity, why does he want to go to another place, another institution? Why does he want to go to that hospital if that hospital has rules against it?
You know, I think what you just hit the nail right on the head with that question, Dr. Stanley. I appreciate you asking that. And that's the whole point. There are many other hospitals and places in California and even out of California he could go to get these procedures done. So the question is, like, so why is he focusing on this hospital? I think this is just a part of the agenda.
Of course, it is. They have a political agenda. They want to transform our society, and they want to do it through the courts, and of course the courts are quite willing to oblige. That's the trouble, because we have people planted within the judiciary who are also part of this movement to undermine and destroy morality.
That's right. And he, you know, they obviously, and that's why I'm convinced why he's choosing to target this Catholic hospital. It's not a matter of tolerance. You know, he's got the ability to go other places and have his thing done. This gentleman and his agenda is intolerant and wants to shut down every hospital, every medical institution that doesn't believe the way he believes, and force them to renounce their Christian faith and Christian ideology. That is tyrannical, it's intolerant, and it's the kind of outrageous bigotry that we have seen displayed throughout many activists in the San Francisco area and the Bay Area and in California. All under the pretext of tolerance, but it is nothing less than bigoted intolerance and acts of hatred towards those who have religious beliefs and convictions and that they want to live those convictions.
Well, of course, that old saying, you know, if God doesn't bring his judgment on San Francisco and California, he's going to have to apologize to the people in Sodom and Gomorrah. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think that people really don't understand the spiritual implications of what's going on today. And now, are you representing the hospital in this, Brad?
We have offered to represent them. My legal staff is in communication with them. The role that we play is still unclear, but we've had similar case matters like this before, and so we want to do everything we can to come alongside, without charge, of course, to offer our services to assist them any way that we can.
Well, I think that'd be very, very smart, even if they want to have their own lawyers handle it, to have you there with your background and understanding of the law, because, of course, I'm sure there are ways to deal with this and, of course, to get this thing so that if this man wants to be a transsexual and he wants to have a sex trade operation, he wants to get his breast enlarged, fine. But he shouldn't try to force somebody to do something that is against their religious beliefs. And these people aren't the most intolerant, angry, hostile people in the world, because they know they're in revolt against God and his plan for their lives. Because God doesn't make mistakes, and he doesn't put a woman in a man's body or a man in a woman's body. So go right ahead, Brad.
Oh, yeah. So that's what we're fighting in the way of truth and tolerance here. I did a good report on a victory that we dealt with on a national level. As many of your audience may be aware, we testified before Congress last year in opposition to the, quote, hate crimes bill, often referred to as a thought crimes bill because it threatened federal intrusion into churches and intimidation of religious people who opposed certain immoral behaviors, like an homosexual behavior, for example. Well, we testified against it, and make a long story short, I'm pleased to announce that at the end of the day, it was shot down. And that's a very nice victory for those who saw that the House of Representatives and the Senate were definitely moving in the wrong direction. The Democrats were pushing it, this religiously oppressive legislation. And I think partly because we're approaching election year, in the end they decided to move it ahead. And also Bush had threatened to veto it when it was attached to a defense bill, so they removed it. So that was from the legislation. That was definitely a success. But, you know, depending on who's in the White House, next time around we may see this kind of federal oppression against religious institutions through the form of a hate crimes bill, very similar to what they have in Canada right now, where pastors are prosecuted and one was put in jail recently.
And of course, the thing is, it would influence what I'm able to do on talk programs as well. So it doesn't just be the ministers, but we would not be able to express our feeling that homosexuality is wrong. And if you really love people who are homosexuals, if you care for them, and I took care of many of them when I was practicing, you tell them what you're doing is wrong. It's going to kill you. And of course, you know, it is against God's law. It's against God's plan for humanity, and it's going to bring judgment upon you. It's going to bring judgment upon society, and specifically here in California. I really fear, I tremble for my country, as Thomas Jefferson said, when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever.
Oh, absolutely. And people out there who would like to keep up with our cases, I encourage them to go to our website, which is, and there they can sign up to get our press releases sent to them. It'll go out to them the same time it goes out to the LA Times and everywhere else. It's www.pji.org. That's pji.org. And there they can click stay up to date, and we'd love to keep them updated with many cases we're handling. One of the hottest cases we're handling, Dr. Stanley, that you're well aware of, I'm sure, is defending in God We Trust on our currency, on our money. As you are well aware, Michael Newdow has been a major opponent to God. He's a renowned atheist, attorney, and doctor. He is the one who fought the Pledge of Allegiance, and to have that ruled to be unconstitutional, and he's actually in the process of doing that again. But he's also challenged in God We Trust on our currency. We intervened in that case matter. That means we became a party to the case to defend people of faith. And the judge allowed us to do that, and we filed a motion to dismiss to kick out the case, and the judge agreed with us. We won the first round. But then he appealed it to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And one of our star attorneys, our chief counsel, Kevin Snyder, argued that before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And I was actually there to watch him argue it. He did an excellent job. Of the three judges on that panel, that Ninth Circuit panel, two of the three were clearly liberal justices. One of them, the one residing, was the infamous Judge Reinhardt. I know you've heard of him before. He's one of the most liberal, anti-God kind of judges that we could have had on that panel. He had earlier ruled that the Pledge of Allegiance was unconstitutional. Okay, give you an idea. Well, Kevin did such a good job that in the arguing that we think we may actually have swayed the other liberal judge, and we may actually prevail in a 2-1 victory. If not, if we don't have that upset win, then it without question will go to the United States Supreme Court, where we will be arguing and defending our national motto, "In God We Trust," before the highest court in the land.
Well, I guess the thing is that this is on the money, so it is really a federal issue. I don't think it could be decided at the state court level, or could it?
No, it couldn't be. No, it couldn't be. It's before the Ninth Circuit, a court of appeals right now. So it depends on how the Ninth Circuit decides it. And then it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, let's just hope that, of course, it is killed right there in the Ninth Circuit Court. Once in a while, they come up with some pretty good decisions, you know. You just never know what it's going to appeal to them. But if you don't have somebody who's already so prejudiced and has this intense hatred of God in the judiciary, why, you know, some people, even liberals, can be won around with an effective argument. And, of course, anybody who's ever studied the Christian history of America knows that the Supreme Court has repeatedly held that we were a Christian nation. Not that everybody had to be a Christian, not that all of our laws had to be, you know, adjudicated by a minister or by a theologian, but the foundation of this country was based upon the Bible. It was based upon Christianity and the idea that you could only be free if you could actually control yourself, if you could actually, you know, take care of yourself, provide for yourself. And of course, the whole idea of freedom was not that you could do whatever you wanted to, but that you would do what you should do according to God's law. And those will not be ruled by God, will be ruled by tyrants. And that's why America was different, because the power of government was limited, because people could rule themselves according to God's law. when they were Christians, when the Christians, people, you know, adhered to God's law. And once you do away with God's law, then you end up with man's law, don't you, Brad?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, our founding fathers understood, and they enunciated this a number of times, different founding fathers, that democracy demands a religious and moral people, because the extent to which individuals are not responsible themselves is the extent to which government is forced to take away freedom and liberty to maintain order. And that's the hardcore reality. And I want freedom. I want liberty. Therefore, I want a society where religion flourishes and is effective in reaching the hearts and lives of individuals across the country.
And those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants.
Right.
It's either the Bible or the bullet. Which would you like, the bayonet? Well, we're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Our guest has been Brad Digges of the Pacific Justice Institute. Well, Brad, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stanley. I can just simply say last year, 2007, was a major challenge to us at the Pacific Justice Institute. In God We Trust, defending the handing out of Bibles at prisons. We just had some major legislative battles, and as well as in the courts. Last year we handled over 3,000 requests for assistance. Before it was 2,000, now it's over 3,000 without charge. So 2007 was a major challenge to us. I'm pleased to say that I think it was the most rewarding and effective for us in our ministry this last year. 2008 is going to be even more challenging, partly because we're going to see even a greater expansion of exposure to people learning about what we're doing and contacting us, and we're just very excited about that. And the requests are going to continue to come in as we continue to do the work. So I encourage people to keep us in their prayers, to pray for our ministry. We want to serve. We have servants' hearts, and we're not out to get anyone. No, quite the contrary. We're out to help people, and to prevent them from being victimized any more than they need to from an intolerant society. And if people need help or their church needs help, we do a lot of work helping churches overcome land use zoning restrictions. Or if they'd like me to come speak at their church, perhaps I do that without charge. I love to do that. I've spoken at many churches. They should not hesitate to give my office a call. We don't charge for any of our work. It's all without charge. And to call my office, it's simply 888-305-9129. That's 888-305-9129. Or they go to our webpage and they can get more information and sign up to get our press releases and updates and or possibly sign up to support our ministry and become a part of our nonprofit team and making a real difference. That's simply www.pji.org, that's pji.org, and we really look forward to serving the people of California and beyond.
And of course, I think, although Brad doesn't make a big issue out of it, they do need funding. They do a great job. We personally, Barbara and I, support them because we think that, you know, the average individual caught in the legal system, you know, is really totally lost. Well, they can't take on all legal claims, but those that have to do with persecution, having to do with your religious beliefs, are there to defend you so that you're not alone. And I think that they do a wonderful, wonderful job. We know people that they've helped. And Brad, thank you for everything you do, and we'll look forward to having you back on some of our other programs in the real near future.
Thank you very much. It's always a privilege to be on your program, Dr. Stanley. Thank you again.
Good night. God bless.
Good night. God bless.
Well, there's Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Brad Digges. As we were saying, they do need funding. Barbara and I contribute to them because we believe in what they're doing, and we hope if you're out there in the listening audience and you're so moved why you want to contribute to what Brad is doing there at the Pacific Justice Institute, they serve God by working within the courts. And certainly I've known Brad for a long time before he even set up the Pacific Justice Institute. And his motivation, of course, is to do God's work in the legal field. Isn't it nice to know that there really are some Christian lawyers out there? that's sort of like dry water, but it really isn't. There are Christians out there in the legal field, and they're doing their best, and we want to applaud them. Well, Chris, this is the time once again when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is still primarily listener-supported. And if you're listening to us, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you call us at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927, you can learn about how to join the Radio Liberty family. And then, of course, you go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can get our where we're heard on shortwave, 3 hours a day now, and certainly you can listen to our programs there that are archived. That we have a 9-hour stream of our programs every day, 4 hours live, and the rest are replays. But then you can listen to our archive programs. You can listen to our MP3 programs, and we encourage you to listen on the internet and get others to listen on the internet. Or you can certainly record the programs off of the website and then, of course, get them to other people. You can watch our DVDs. Many of them are up there on our website at radioliberty.com, and you can watch them. And of course, we hope that you want to get the originals, but if you don't, why, you can watch them there and get other people to watch them. And then, of course, you can pull down our newsletters. We don't charge for anything on our website. We give you our permission to copy and distribute anything that we have done, as long as you're not charging for it. We want you to get the word out, because people have to understand the true nature of this battle. There is a conspiracy against Christianity. There are people out there who hate Christianity. And if you don't like the word conspiracy, just get out your, a Bible index, the one that tells you about the words that are in the Bible, and you can you will find that the word conspiracy is used many times. And if it's good enough for God, it certainly is good enough for me. And the Strong's Concordance is what we use to go through and pick out all the places in the Bible where the word conspiracy is used. And there is a conspiracy against God, but then there's a conspiracy against, as so many things that are going on in the world today, a conscious, organized, Luciferian effort to destroy the Christian foundation of this country, to destroy Christianity, to merge us into a one-world government, to do away with our sovereignty, our freedom, and in many instances, our lives. And if you've never read the writings of Barbara Marx Hubbard, who talks about the necessity of destroying a quarter of the world's population, and, of course, she says, that's not your job, my dear, that is ours. For we are the writers of the Pale Horse Death. She did that in the original manuscript of her book, Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, which was eventually published under the auspices of the Lawrence Rockefeller Endowment for the Humanities. The Lawrence Rockefeller Endowment for the Humanities. That was David Rockefeller's brother. And the uncle, of course, of Stephen Rockefeller, who wrote the Earth Charter. And, of course, until people understand that the Rockefeller family were involved in the occult, certain of them were, and why, you can't understand anything going on today. And, of course, not just the Rockefellers, the Fords were as well, after all. Henry Ford was deeply involved with theosophy, and of course, he financed both Adolf Hitler and the communists, both sides. Why? But, of course, you have to understand the spiritual forces behind the Nazis, the spiritual forces behind the communist movement. Certainly, you need to get my talk on the forbidden secret, on the Brotherhood of Darkness, the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Please pray for America. Our number, 1-800-544-8927.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.